Anyone owning stocks or mutual funds should be aware by now that the demand for high-tech products has fallen. That's driven down the stocks of Cisco and Intel and others and put many startups out of business. Some industry watchers fear this might hurt the country's innovative pace. But if you shift your perspective from financial quarters to decades or even millennia, this is still a good time for technical innovation. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
In his garage workshop in Santa Clara, 73-year-old Bob Austell is showing me a device for preventing train derailments that he invented after retiring from the Southern Pacific Railroad.
You put these two pieces on the railroad rail.
Austell tried to start a business around the product, but it failed. Still, Austell says he deeply enjoys inventing things, among them a hedge trimming tool and a way of pinstriping wall surfaces. Of course, there are people like this in all walks of life who are so driven to innovate that they risk their money and pride to create something new.
You do stick your neck out and you expose yourself for kidding and ridicule. But I think a lot of these attributes we inherit through our genes. I'm firmly convinced of that. My dad was an innovative sort of fella.
Looking at the world around us today, at space exploration, medicines, and electronic gadgets of all kinds, it would be easy to assume that humans have innovated and improved things constantly throughout history, pushed by some innate drive. But that hasn't been the case. Richard Wilk is an economic anthropologist and chair of the anthropology department at Indiana University. Wilk says for the vast majority of human history, important technological innovations were actually quite uncommon.
If you look at human technology, its main characteristic has been its stability over long periods of time. The earliest human tools, the first toolkit seems to have satisfied people for almost a million years. And then you get the next great leap to something called a hand axe.
Which in turn, Wilk says, remained unchanged for 700,000 years. Wilk says it's not that humans aren't naturally innovative. Just look at the development of language. And for thousands of years, people have expressed creativity through music, culture, and storytelling. But Wilk says there wasn't the constant pursuit of technological innovation that we see today. In part, that's because as the pace of innovation picked up, it often met resistance. Many visionaries, such as Galileo, faced persecution. Also, scientific pursuits were removed from common people. Even just a few hundred years ago, most people saw no technological progress during their entire lives and kept farming or making pottery the same way their parents did.
Well, think about it this way. Say you're fishing in the North Sea in the 1500s and you invent a way to catch a whole lot more fish. What good does it do you? Because you can't sell those fish. I mean, you can't eat more fish than you got. And the kinds of things you can trade the fish for are pretty limited.
When water turns into steam, it's called a phase shift. And between 200 and 300 years ago, something akin to that happened to our society's pace of innovation. Paul Romer is an economist with Stanford University. He says back then, several forces were converging and heating up innovation. One was a political shift where scientists were no longer heretics and some governments protected individual freedom and initiative. A second was the development of scientific institutions such as universities. Romer says the third factor was the emergence of large market economies.
The social institution of the market has been extraordinarily powerful. One way to think about the role of the market is to look at the life of a particular individual. Think about Thomas Edison, for example. In another era, who knows what he might have tried to do? Perhaps join the church or work his way up within the government bureaucracy. But in a market economy, he can say, if I can come up with the light bulb, if I can invent the phonograph, I can go out and sell it in the market and make a big profit. That was all driven by the potential for economic gain.
So Romer says suddenly, in historical terms, millions of people began innovating on their own as entrepreneurs and within companies and universities. He says that's why people born on farms 90 years ago with candlelight and mule-drawn plows saw the development of jet planes, laser surgery, and computers all in a single lifetime. Even in periods of rapid innovation, the road can be bumpy. Investors create stock market bubbles. We just saw a wave of bad decisions made in the internet and telecommunications industries. And when there's a slowdown in the economy, like there is now, a lot of people get justifiably upset. Their retirement stock portfolios lose value. Hundreds of thousands of people have lost their jobs in recent months. But Romer says economists and pundits often get so focused on those issues, they miss the bigger picture.
People lose sight of this powerful engine which decade by decade steadily raises the quality of life. And that, as long as we don't make deep mistakes with our support for science, our support for universities, our educational system, that powerful engine will keep working away. We need to work to extend that engine so it applies for more countries of the world.
In fact, some academics who take the long-term perspective are not worried about our economy or our rate of innovation slowing. Rather, they're shocked and somewhat scared by how we're hurtling forward with everything from biological weapons to the potential for human cloning. But Paul Romer is optimistic about our new relationship with technology, in part because he says it changes an important human equation, competition over resources. Romer says as the tools we use become more advanced, they allow us to do more with less, to grow more food on the same plot of land, or produce many life-saving drugs cheaply.
In the past, if we wanted our children to have a better quality of life, basically meant that we had to impose a worse quality of life on somebody else. We had to take over territory, start a battle with another tribe or nation. Now we have paths where we can make life better for ourselves and our children, and at the same time, make them better for everyone else. And in a deep philosophical sense, that may be even more important to the change in the quality of human life than the material benefits that we associated with technology.
Of course, right now, there are still wars fought over land, many industries damage the environment, and more than 1 billion people around the world still don't have safe drinking water, let alone electricity or drugs to fight diseases like AIDS. So, in this new era of innovation, Romer says these problems are a reminder that technologies are still just tools, and what people do with them is another question. Chris Arnold, NPR News, San Francisco.